What the new tax law means for your tax return this year and next. The IRS declared January 29th opening day for tax season. Maybe you are one of those organized people who has already filed your tax return. If so, congratulations. If not, you are in the majority. In fact, each year more than 20 million people wait until the last minute, mid-April, to file. And that doesn't even count the people who get extensions. This year, there might be a twist to your filing, the new tax law. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today, we have experts in our studio to answer your tax questions. Nearly all of the changes in the tax code will not apply until you file your 2018 return, but there is still a lot to think about between now and then. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Late last December, the president signed into law the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. The law changes individual tax rates and brackets and makes changes to deductions, exemptions, and more. Well, joining me in the studio to explain some of those changes and how they might affect you, Jessamine Norton. She is Chief Investment Officer and Executive Vice President with Spinnaker Trust. And Daniel Dworen is also with us today. He is a CPA and principal with Albin, Randall, and Bennett. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about the new tax law and how it affects you? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Dan, I know that just reading the new tax bill would probably take more than the hour that we have, but why don't we start with some of the highlights? What elements of it will affect most people?
Well, I think as a general statement, it's fair to say that for individuals, there is an element of simplification to the law and that they won't have to tally up certain itemized deductions anymore. And for businesses, it's very much a complication because they've been introduced new concepts that we haven't dealt with before. And we're struggling. I think everybody is struggling to understand what the implications of those are going to be on businesses.
And Jessamine, one of the things we don't know yet is what Maine is going to do if there's going to be what's referred to as tax conformity. So as far as people planning for the future, that's an element, isn't it?
Oh, certainly. And we haven't even really gone down that path yet because I think we still feel a bit uncertain.
Okay. So, but I want to get this out of the way first. People now are about to file their taxes. Dan, their 2017 taxes, is there anyone out there that this tax law affects today as they're filling out their 2017 taxes, or is this all for next year?
Well, there were a couple of changes in the law that did affect 2017. Originally, medical expenses were going to be subject to a 10% threshold for itemized deductions. They've lowered that to 7.5% for last year, so that's a beneficial change for individuals who itemize. And the other big change is for businesses. In terms of bonus depreciation, which was a 50% rate for businesses, when they go out and buy big pieces of equipment, they can take an immediate deduction equal to 50% of the cost of it under the old rules. For property acquired and placed in service after September 27th of 2017, it can be 100%. And so those are the two major changes that affect 2017. Otherwise, everything else is effective beginning in 2018.
Okay. Jessamine, I'm guessing this because most everything else is effective a year from now when you're filing your 2018 taxes, that affects how people might want to think about things this year, maybe make some changes. What are you advising those that you work with?
Yeah, I can make a few comments. I think Dan is better suited to speak to that since I'm mostly on the investment front. But I think, and Dan, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that people may be holding off on taking capital gains taxes. That's something we've read about, anticipating wanting to take them under the lower rate. And certainly the estate planning changes add an element of confusion.
Well, let me ask about that. The estate planning, is there's going to be a larger amount of money that one can gift?
Correct.
Starting when? Starting January 1st of this year?
I believe it's this year. Is that right, Dan?
Yeah, the one big change under the new law is that the lifetime exemption amount, which was a little over $5 million that someone can give away over the course of their life, has been doubled to $11 million. The other change that wasn't part of the tax law, just happened automatically, is the annual exclusion amount that was $14,000 has gone up to $15,000 in 2018.
And that wasn't part of the tax law, that just...
That was just scheduled to happen anyway.
Scheduled to happen. Jessamine, how has the Tax Act affected how you are investing?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I should say that certainly Trump ran on this type of platform, but there, even after he was elected, there was a lot of skepticism as to whether he could actually change taxes in a meaningful way. It had been many, many years since we'd had a tax overhaul. And so the markets did not give him credit for this idea at first. At my firm, we always thought that something would get done. However, our assumption was that at least on the corporate side, that the cut would be much more modest than it ended up being. We went from a 35% corporate tax rate to 21, which is an enormous change. Once it looked like the Tax Act would pass, then, you know, of course, certain categories of stocks and sectors took off. So the sectors of the economy that stood to benefit the most were the ones that were paying the highest taxes. And those tended to be sectors of the economy that were more domestic in nature, who had a much higher proportion of their revenues just coming from the United States. So those tended to be banks, financial companies, and smaller companies. You know, multinationals are generally larger. However, the expensing of capital expenditures and machinery that Dan referred to is really positive for the industrials. And there's another element to it that's the repatriation of overseas cash, which has become very important. And that is very positive for certain types of companies and sectors also.
What types of companies and sectors?
Yeah. So the sectors where the overseas sales are much higher as a proportion are healthcare, for example, and technology. Those are the two biggest. And, you know, Apple famously has $280 billion in cash. I believe it was 97% of which was sitting overseas. So the change allows them to bring the cash back to the United States at a much more reasonable tax rate and in theory, put it to work in a way that's productive for our GDP.
All right. Well, we're talking about the new tax bill and specifically what it might mean for you. If you want to give us a call, the number 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Dan, I want to ask you some things specific to Maine. The deduction for state and local taxes is going to be different, isn't it? And how many people in Maine will it affect? You don't have to give me an exact number, but is this most people, some people, and by how much?
I'd say some people, anybody who itemized deductions on their federal return will be impacted by this. Basically, it's a cap of $10,000 for any state and local tax, which includes income tax, real estate tax, excise taxes you pay when you register your vehicles. So we did see a flurry at year end of people trying to prepay some of those taxes in 2017 when the cap didn't exist. And there is some question as to whether some of those taxes are really deductible. The IRS's position is if the real estate tax was assessed prior to the end of 2017, then it's deductible. Even though it was technically due to be paid in 18, you could deduct it in 17. But if it wasn't assessed yet, their position is that it's not deductible in 2017.
So at this point, here we are in February of 2018. If you haven't done something, you're not going to have an opportunity.
It's probably too late on that one.
Yeah, yeah. Probably too late. Okay. And then what about small businesses in Maine? We know that most businesses in Maine are small businesses. Many businesses are single proprietorships. How does this affect the vast majority of businesses in Maine, which are very small businesses?
Well, it affects them in a lot of different ways. It's hard to generalize because we have this thing called the new 199A deduction for qualified business income, where in general, small businesses should be able to benefit from that. But there are certain types that may not be able to. And if your income goes too high, then the benefit of that may begin to phase out. We're still trying to get our arms around how that works completely. And on the state income tax deduction item, anyone with a small business who's paying the state of Maine income taxes may also be subject to that, or will also be subject to that $10,000 cap on their taxes that they pay personally on a flow-through, let's say, on a flow-through business, we're trying to assess how that's going to impact the choice of entity decision for somebody, whether they want to consider changing to some sort of other form of entity. And states may change how they assess tax.
You know, the new law has raised the standardized deduction, doubled it, is my understanding. How many more people will take that and no longer itemize?
I think a fair number. I had my first 1040 client in the office earlier this week, and I was looking at their return, and they had a total of $50,000 of itemized deductions in the prior year. But with the cap on state and local taxes and some of the other changes, it looked like they were going to have to take the standard in 2018, which is $24,000. So we're going to run a projection for them once we get their 2017 return done to see what the impact is.
And is that something people who use an accountant might want to do, ask for a projection?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I'm thinking with that person may end up paying more in taxes next year, right?
Very much so, yeah. There are going to be winners and there are going to be losers, and trying to generalize about them is pretty difficult. It depends on all the facts and circumstances.
Wow. Well, we'll go to the phones now. I'm going to start with Rosaline, who's calling from York. Hi, Rosaline. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I have concerns that the medical expenses are now almost double. The threshold is almost double. I believe it was 3 or 4%. Now it's 7.5%. I think that's a hardship to people that aren't making a lot of money, where that medical expense really helped offset the extreme cost. And the other thing is, you get taxed on your state return. They ask for that on the federal return. And now that being capped also, I mean, for me, 10% it didn't reach. But I feel like those are two unfair things for people that may be at the lower end of the pay scale. And I don't know how that's justified.
Thank you, Rosaline, for your question. And this is the second time already that the tax threshold for medical expenses has come up. So, Dan, why don't you explain to us what that is exactly? What does that mean, the tax threshold for medical expenses, and then address Rosaline's concern?
Sure. So when somebody is itemizing their deductions, they can deduct medical expenses they pay out of pocket, but only to the extent that it exceeds, for 2017, 7.5% of their adjusted gross income. So let's say somebody has, to make it easy, $100,000 of adjusted gross income. The first $7,500 of medical expenses out of pocket, they can't count as a itemized deduction, but anything above that, they can. That was previously 10% under the law before it got knocked down to 7.5%. And it's been 7.5% for a number of years prior to that. Got increased to 10% a few years ago, and it's back down to 7.5%. On the state income tax refund being taxed by the federal government, that happens to certain people who got a benefit for deducting state income taxes on their prior year return federally. And if you get a refund of that, then they make you take the amount into income to the extent your taxes got reduced in the prior year because you deducted state taxes that you got refunded.
Rosaline, thanks so much for your question. We're going next to Dan. I believe this is Daniel Dross from the Maine Housing Authority. Is that right, Dan?
That's correct, Jennifer. Thank you very much for letting us call in today.
Oh, of course. You're always welcome to call in. And I just want,
thanks.
I know that you want to let people know about, some people know about a deduction they may not know that they can take.
That's correct. The legislature back in 2016, along with some strong advocacy from the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, AARP, Alpha One, and Maine Housing, put into effect a tax credit that allows persons to make modifications to any portion of their home to make it accessible for an individual who has a disability or a physical handicap who either is residing in the home or may reside in the home.
So what does that mean? If someone's hearing this now, is this somebody who's perhaps installed a ramp or an elevator or something like that?
That's correct. There are a number of different modifications that the tax credit would allow. The individual would need to not have an adjusted annual gross income over $55,000, and the tax credit could go up to $9,000. And it's for any work that's been conducted at the home after January 1st of 2017. And all of the information and the application is on our website at mainhousing.org. And the name of the program is Access Able Home. And again, our website has all of the information on it. And people can do the modifications. They can have a contractor do it, or they can do it themselves. If they do the work themselves, we would allow the tax credit for the materials that they spent money on. And if they have a contractor, the full amount of the contractor's services, as well as their materials, would be part of the tax credit.
All right. Well, Dan, thanks so much for calling in. That's Daniel Drost with the Maine State Housing Authority. We'll move on. We're going to go to Edith calling from Portland. Hi, Edith. Go ahead.
Yes, hello, and thank you for taking my call. I would like to know if there will continue to be an additional deduction for those over 65 or those who are blind or disabled.
Yes, there is an additional exemption amount for those who are over 65 and those who are blind, and that is unchanged in the new law.
All right. Well, Edith, thank you so much for your question. If you have a question, you can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address is talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We're talking about the new tax law and how it might affect you either as you do your taxes this year or as you plan for next year. Give us a call. Stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
On the next Planet Money,
everybody's talking about phosphorus.
We go in search of one of the building blocks of the modern world and of life itself.
And we are mining it and running through the supply.
And on How I Built This, we meet Perry Chen, the guy who started Kickstarter.
It's an hour of economics and innovation on Planet Money
and How I Built This from NPR.
You can hear Planet Money and How I Built This back-to-back Saturday morning at 11 o'clock on Maine Public Radio. For those times when the radio is out of reach and your smart speaker isn't around, you can always turn to the Maine Public app. It allows you to take Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical with you on the go for mobile streaming anywhere and anytime. You can catch up on the news or your favorite programs. Plus, you'll have access to many PBS and Maine Public television programs. The Maine Public app is available for Apple and Android smartphones and tablets, and you can download it for free from both the Apple App Store and the Google Play Store.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, understanding the changes to the tax law. In the studio with me, Jessamine Norton. She is Chief Investment Officer and Executive Vice President with Spinnaker Trust. And Daniel Dworen is a CPA in principle with Albin, Randall, and Bennett. We invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Jessamine, we started the year with this new tax law, and then we've seen now recently a couple weeks of a lot of volatility, to say the least, in the stock market. Do you have nervous investors between the two, and what are you telling them?
So, of course, 2017, to step back a bit, was an unbelievable year in equity markets. The S&P 500 was up by 22% on a total return basis, and international markets were up even more. So it was a good year, and the exclamation point to the year was the passage of the Tax Act, which is has mixed impact on different companies, but as a whole is very good for most companies in the economy. And then in January, investors started to come back into the market. So January, the market was up 7%, almost 8% in 1 month, which is a bit unsustainable. I was a little worried at the end of the month. So a correction in the market was overdue. We hadn't had a meaningful correction in nearly 2 years at that point. It would have been January and February of 16. It was overdue. There were a number of volatility products that are being blamed, but we had about a 10% correction, and the market is back up nicely. So I can't draw a parallel with the tax changes necessarily, but we certainly had an extended market, and the Tax Act contributed to that.
Sure. And a lot to think about and a lot to absorb in a very short amount of time. We have a Facebook message from Steve. I was told there's something referred to as a pass-through for sole proprietors, partnerships, and LLCs. Is this the 199A that was mentioned early in the show? I was told that something like the first $200,000 of gross income would be non-taxable for these business entities.
Well, a little off on the $200,000 number, but yeah, the 199A deduction is a deduction that will apply to pass-through income. It's business income. So flow-through income from a partnership or an S-corporation or even somebody as a sole proprietor working a Schedule C, as we call it. And the potential deduction is up to 20% of the qualified business income. So the $200,000 number, I'm not sure where that came from, but the maximum deduction could be up to 20%.
So if I work for myself as a house cleaner and I'm bringing in $25,000 in a year,
yes,
$5,000 of that would be my deduction.
Theoretically, yes. Yes.
And is my tax return one and the same, my personal tax return and my business tax return?
Yes. If you're a sole proprietor, it all gets folded into your own personal return.
All right. Steve, thanks so much for that question. We're going to go to Port Clyde and Jolene. Hi, Jolene. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, Jennifer. So good to hear the program. And the reason that I'm calling, and this may be a federal tax question, I'm wondering if anyone has heard about the cut to Medicare and also a cut to food stamps.
You mean in the tax law?
Right. In the tax law.
Okay. I'm getting perplexed looks from my guess here. I know that there's discussion about food stamps going on right now in Congress, but we're talking about the changes in the tax law that was passed a couple months ago.
I just heard something on the news the other day, and it was either a $1.5 million cut in Medicare, and I believe this is federal, and I think it was something like a $5 million in food stamps.
Yeah, you know, Jolene, it's a good question, but I think it's a question for another show when we have a different panel of experts on. But I appreciate you calling in today. We're going to go to JoJo, who sent an email. I have some money in the stock market. Is now a good time to sell? If only anybody could answer that question, right, Jessamine?
Of course. The answer to that question, you always have to put a caveat in. How long-term is that money? Do you need it anytime soon? Do you need it within 3 to 5 years? Or is this money that's extra, truly extra, and you want to invest it and put it away for the long term? If you need it in the intermediate term, it's probably a good time to sell. If not, you know, we believe that there is more room to go in this economic expansion, at least a year, if not a little bit more. We get a lot of questions about this simply because this particular business cycle is getting on in length. It's quite a bit longer than average. But companies are doing incredibly well, partially thanks to the tax changes. And economies around the globe are growing. Valuations became a little bit more reasonable over the last 2 weeks as the markets came down. And we keep up a complex set of economic metrics that are still flashing green, if you will. So, no, I don't think it's a long time. I don't think it's the right time to sell if you're a long-term investor.
Does it depend on how old you are?
No. I mean, certainly if you're retired, you might generally be more cautious. But again, you know, even if you're retired, you need your money to grow. So you do need you need to be invested in equities and in the market broadly. So, right. No, I don't think the time is yet.
All right. An email from Mike. Are there any changes in the taxing of Social Security income by Maine and or the IRS?
No. Social Security federally is taxable up to 85% of it, and that was unchanged by the new law, and Maine hasn't made any changes.
I want to ask you about mortgages and for primary homes and for second homes. How does the tax law affect those?
Well, a couple of changes there. Home equity loan interest under the prior law used to be deductible. So if you went out and borrowed money on your home to buy a car or send your kids to college, up to $100,000 of debt associated with that interest could be used as a deduction, the interest associated with that $100,000. That now has been taken away under the new tax law. So home equity debt is no longer deductible unless you can trace that interest to being used in some sort of deductible way, like investment interest expense or some other deductible interest. But just on the face of it, home equity interest is not going to be deductible anymore. And for people who have big homes, home acquisition debt was deductible up to $1 million worth of debt previously. They've reduced that down to $750,000 under the new law. And that's for mortgages that were established sometime in December of 17. I'm not sure the exact date, but any old mortgages that are still in force, the $1 million is still the number, but any new mortgages coming online, only interest associated with $750,000 can be deducted.
So back to the home equity line, the deduction for home equity interest is coming at the same time where interest rates for home equity lines are going up. So would your advice to be to people who have a home equity line that this might be a time to take it a little more seriously and try to pay it down in a way that they might not have been in the last few years?
Yeah, definitely. I think Jessamine would probably agree that interest, people shouldn't be paying interest just to get a tax deduction. You need to look at the economics of the situation. And if the economics don't make sense, getting a tax deduction for it isn't going to make it a whole lot better. So if interest rates are going up, you may want to consider paying that down.
Agreed. You know, interest rates are going up. They're not high on an absolute level yet, especially relative to history. But they could be in a year or two.
We'll go to Steve calling from Bangor. Hi, Steve. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hey, good afternoon. I have a quick question for your guest. I'm a fortunate parent of a college student who, again, fortunately scored a very good scholarship amount from the college and Pell Grants and everything, received a 1098-T with a large amount of scholarship, and then only qualified tuition expense expressed on there, not board and room and all the other items that the scholarship was used for. Is that deductible at all or anyhow for either the student or the parent?
That's a great question. There is a federal credit out there, there's a couple of them, but the American Opportunity Tax Credit and the Lifetime Learning Credit are the two federal credits that are in play. And it can be a credit of, I forget the exact amounts, I think a few thousand dollars, which will be very, very beneficial. And that's what the form 1098-T is used for. So those will be used to compute those credits. The American Opportunity Credit applies for the first 4 years in college. So it sounds like your child would probably qualify for the American Opportunity Credit. That's the more generous of the two credits. And this is one where you might need to consult with a tax advisor or look at the IRS publications about it. There are ways that the parent can claim the credit, the child can claim the credit. It's going to depend a lot on the facts and circumstances of each situation and who's going to get the most benefit for it.
Steve, thanks for your call. We'll go to a Facebook message from Megan. What is the new tax law going to do for those of us who are self-employed? I earn approximately $22,000 to $25,000 a year.
I think at that level of income, you'll probably see some tax decrease from the overall lowering of the rates and the 20% Section 199 deduction. As a general statement, I think that's fair to make. But again, with a lot of this tax law, it's kind of like baking a cake when you don't have a recipe. You think you know what the ingredients are and you think you know what the result will be, but when you take it out of the oven and taste the cake, maybe it's not quite what you were expecting. So you kind of have to run the fact patterns and see how it all plays out. But I think as a general statement, you should see some tax savings in that scenario.
Do you all know of places people can do that? Are there calculators out there where folks can put in their information from this year and at least have an idea of how it might affect them next year?
You could probably Google. I haven't done it to see what's available online. We obviously have our own resources as professionals in our office, but there might be some things out there. And I guess I'd be wary of anything online, too. You kind of have to watch out.
Sure. Okay, Megan, thanks for your question. We'll go to Arthur. This is an email. Can you tell me if one can itemize one's charitable deductions from last year, this year? In the past, I have itemized all charitable contributions for a reduction in my taxes?
Well, any charitable contributions that were paid in 2017 can be deducted on your 2017 return, and any charitable contributions paid in 2018 will be able to be deducted on your 2018 return. I guess the caveat to that is if your standard deduction federally is more than the total of all your itemized deductions, including your charitable, then maybe you won't really get a benefit for that charitable deduction because the standard amount was bigger than that total.
And that's a big concern among a number of nonprofits and philanthropies, isn't it? That when some people who used to itemize their deductions will no longer be doing so, there might be some incentive that goes away to making donations. Jessamine, you're nodding. You've heard about this.
Yeah. You know, it's yet to be seen. This is new. But that was one of the fears going in. Is that, you know, obviously, that was used to impact taxes in a positive way. And so on the margin, perhaps people would contribute less. We'll see. Dan will have some comments about that, too.
Well, one idea that people should think about, particularly the older folks in the audience who have to take a required distribution from their IRA, is that you can make a direct charitable distribution from your IRA to charity that doesn't get included in your income if you have to take required minimum distributions, which are people that are over age 70 and a half. And then under the new law, folks who find themselves unable to take advantage of their charitable deductions because they don't have total deductions that exceed the standard could utilize this move to essentially reduce their taxable income by directing that some of their required minimum distribution from their IRA go to charity.
And aren't there some other ways in which IRAs and Roth IRAs are affected by this new law?
Minimally, there were a couple of small changes to some technical things, but no dramatic impact on those.
Okay. We'll go to Ed, who's sending us, I think this is a tweet. I work as a courier and I'm paid both hourly and by the mile since I use my vehicle. The rate I am paid per mile is considerably less than the 55.5 cents allowed by the IRS. This has given me a deduction until the new tax codes. According to my accountant, based on previous years, I stand to lose an $18,000 yearly deduction in 2018.
Does it say if is he self-employed?
He doesn't say.
Okay. If you were an employee and you're in that situation of not being reimbursed at the IRS rate, and you were able to take advantage of that on your tax return by deducting the additional amount, that is correct that those what's called miscellaneous itemized deductions have been taken away under the new law.
What are some of the other miscellaneous itemized deductions?
I'm sorry to say tax preparation fees is one of them. Investment advisory fees another one. Safe deposit box fees is a myriad of them. Unreimbursed employee expenses, as the emailer referred to. Those are the big ones.
All right. Well, what we're talking about is the new tax law and how that might affect you, whether as an individual, as a small business, or as an investor. If you have questions, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainpublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does New England Cancer Specialists, committed to leading the way to better outcomes for 50 years. More at newenglandcancerspecialists.org.
In Parkland, Florida, ordinary Americans performed acts of heroism amid acts of violence at a high school shooting.
These teachers, you know, got all the kids that they could see and shoved them somewhere safe and locked them away so that they didn't get hurt. And I'm just so grateful.
Stories of victims and survivors this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
You can join us for All Things Considered every weekday afternoon from 4 to 6:30 on Maine Public Radio.
Hello, I'm Linda Hunt. Author Matthew Desmond joins us to talk about the crisis of poverty and eviction in America. Desmond provides a ground-level view of the nation's urban housing crisis, and he offers possible solutions for it. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures is coming up in about 20 minutes after Maine Calling at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling today on the program Understanding the New Tax Law. Joining me today, Jessamine Norton, Chief Investment Officer and Executive Vice President with Spinnaker Trust, and Daniel Dworin is a CPA and Principal with Albin, Randall, and Bennett. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. We have an email from Phil. I've sold some Unum stock in 2017. It's a stock I've held for many years untouched with dividends reinvested, but I can't get an average basis from either Unum or the company that manages their stocks. All I get is the long list of quarterly reinvest. Is this typical for Unum?
I can't comment on that,
yeah, or for anyone. Is that typical for any company?
If the stock was granted a very long time ago, there's a possibility that the basis either wasn't recorded or is so low that they don't have the history of it. But that's a difficult position to be in, but I'm not sure.
Okay, I've got an email from Nancy. Can one take deductions for a second home? We talked about this briefly already.
Yes.
Okay. We'll go to Mark calling from Vienna. Hi, Mark. Go ahead. Mark, go ahead. Are you there? Shoot. Okay, we'll move on to Indian Township in Wayne. Hi, Wayne, go ahead.
Hi, I have a question about making mistakes. If mistakes are made and we discover them later on this transition time, is the IRS going to be lenient or start charging those taxes they usually charge when it's only one-sided? If they make a mistake, we don't get nothing. But if we make a mistake, boy, we get zapped. Is that continue going to happen?
In general, probably yes. I'd have to say. If you make a mistake, you have 3 years to amend your tax return and either pay the additional tax or ask for the refund. The IRS has the same amount of time to do an audit on your return. Although if they suspect that you've substantially understated your income, they can go back 6 years. And if they suspect fraud, they can go back forever with no limit on the amount of time.
But if it's an honest transitional mistake, they'll give you a little bit of time without the interest or with the interest?
Well, they always charge interest. The question will be with penalty or without penalty. That's normally the item you can negotiate a bit. They don't negotiate on interest. And there is a provision about this 199A deduction where they've increased the penalty slightly for someone who overstates their qualified business income deduction under the new law, which was kind of interesting to see that they did that.
Yeah. Wayne, thanks so much for calling. We're going to move on to Brewer and Harrison. Hi, Harrison. Go ahead.
Hi. In my case, my concern is when we cap the SALT deduction at $10,000, last year, I had $29,000 in itemized deductions, a great deal of which was state and local taxes. And then we also got rid of the personal exemptions. I have a family of five. So essentially, last year, I started to pay taxes on my federal income above $49,000 because I had $29,000 in itemized deductions and roughly $20,000 in personal exemptions. This year, that drops to $24,000 because I can no longer itemize more than $24,000 in deductions, and the personal exemption goes away. So it takes an awful lot of cut in tax to make up for an additional $25,000 in adjusted gross income. So it looks to me like I'm way behind and am subject to pay many thousands of dollars in additional taxes.
Harrison, how old are your five kids?
What?
Didn't you say you had five kids?
No, I have a family of five, so three kids, husband, and wife.
Okay, and how old are the kids?
They are one in high school, and one in middle, and one in elementary.
Okay, but all under 17 years old. So in some ways, Harrison, this is what you were talking about before, Dan, is he's one of those people that's not, when he says SALT, it's state and local taxes, he's not going to be able to deduct as much as he did before, but his his exemption for each child is going to be higher, correct?
Well, no, the exemption has gone away as well. But the thing that has gone up is the child tax credit.
That's what I meant. Okay.
Yeah, for those 17, under 17, the child tax credit, which used to be up to $1,000, has been increased to $2,000.
But doesn't even approach what he's losing in the state and local taxes, it sounds like.
That's a good question. I would agree with the caller that he seems exposed to theoretically paying more taxes. I'm not sure if that's going to get recouped between the additional child tax credit and the lowering of the rates in any way. It may not be as bad as he's thinking, but he's got the potential there to be one of those that pays more.
Mm. Harrison, thanks for your call. And this is something that you've been looking at, isn't it, Dan? You've been looking at different kinds of people and who might be affected in different ways. What are some of the things you're finding out as you run some, the phrase I just learned, fact patterns?
Yeah, we ran a few different things. Nick Lagoditz from my office helped me out with these numbers. And we took the typical average Maine income and deductions. And in general, we saw federal decreases ranging from between $500 to $1,700 for average income taxpayers and maybe zero to $5,300 for higher income taxpayers. But again, it very much varies. We had one client who we ran the numbers in 17 and 18, assuming the fact patterns in each year. They had a change of life circumstance where the facts were different in each year. And in one fact pattern, they paid $900 more in 2018, and in the other, they paid $7,000 more in 2018. So same person with just different facts, and you get very different answers.
I know there's so many people out there who really are trying to make it so that they come out even at the end of the year for taxes. It's hard enough in a regular year. It's going to be really challenging this coming year, isn't it?
Yeah, one thing that the administration has done is change the withholding tables for everybody on the assumption that everybody's tax rate would go down and their taxes would go down. So
so what does that mean, changing the withholding tables?
So if you have a job and you're having federal withholding taken out of your pay from a paycheck, then the amount that's going to come out of your paycheck every week is going to be less, meaning your net paycheck will be a little bit more every week. And that's fine and dandy for now, but you'll have to remember that when you file your return next April. If you expect to get a refund like maybe you always have in the past, you might not, or it may not be as big as it used to be because the withholding amounts have gone down. And it could be really compounded for someone like the previous caller who actually experienced a tax increase but then has less withholding from their job. They could really be facing a huge bill come next April.
So for many people who are kind of excited, the last couple of weeks they've seen their paychecks a little higher than they had been last year, it might not be a bad idea to go to the Human Resources Department and say, can I adjust that so I'm kind of back to where I was last year?
That would be the safe thing to do. And if there's any windfall, get it next April.
Interesting. Wow. An email from Rick. Does the RMD tax avoidance rule apply to RMDs for inherited IRAs or only RMDs on IRAs that kick in at 70.5? And whoever answers this needs to explain what the RMD tax avoidance rule is.
It's not going to be me.
Yeah, we don't like to use the word avoidance much either in this business, but RMD is required minimum distribution. And that's what I was referring to earlier about money that has to come out of an IRA when you turn age 70 and a half. And if you inherit an IRA, you may be in a position where you have to take money out because the decedent was over 70 and a half. As I sit here, I'm not 100% sure as to whether the qualified charitable distribution can be used for someone who's under 70 and a half, but who is taking RMDs. I have to admit, I'm not sure on that one.
Okay, Rick, thanks for your question. Email from Martha, not sure if I missed this. Can you address changes in school loans in regards to tax deductions?
The student loan interest deduction, that's a good one. I don't believe it was addressed in the new law, and I'm not sure if it's expired or not. I think for 2017 it's still in play, but I have to admit I'm not sure about 2018.
An email from Mel. My husband died in October of 2016, and I filed a joint return that year. This year, I cannot file as a qualifying widow, which was very distressing to learn. I now have to file as a single, which is a loss for me. What's the reasoning behind this? I have less money due to the loss of my husband. It seems like punishment added to grief.
I guess that's a question for the tax policy folks. I'm not sure I can explain the reason why, but she is correct that those are the rules that in this year she would have to file single.
All right. Well, we're talking about the new tax code. The phone number 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. An email from Mike. I was wondering what happens to dividends paid by REITs, BDCs, and MLPs. And again, we need some acronym explanation as well.
Well, REITs are REITs, Real Estate Investment Trusts. Mm-hmm. MLPs are Master Limited Partnerships.
What was the middle one, Jennifer?
BDCs.
BDCs.
Business development companies.
It's an email.
Yeah, I think they're business development companies.
And the question again was, what happens to the dividends?
Dividends paid,
by them?
For those.
The if they're qualified dividends from a U.S. company, which most of those would be, I would think, then they're still subject to the preferential tax rates of either zero, in some cases 15%, or 20%. Master limited partnership distributions, you get a K-1 at the end of the year for those, mm-hmm. and those aren't really dividends that are taxed. You get taxed on the income that's on your what's called a Schedule K-1. It's a little more complicated.
Okay. Well, Mike, thanks so much for your email. Owen wants to know, this is an email, could each guest possibly share their opinions of the new federal tax law? Jessamine, you have an opinion about it, or is it just your job to study it and see how to benefit your clients?
More the latter. And again, I'm focused on the investment side of things. So I think it was very positive for large companies in the United States. Not for every company, but when taken as a whole, it was very positive. Especially if you were a multinational company with a lot of business overseas, the treatment of international revenues was a bit unfair or very different relative to the rest of the world. So that's been right-sided to a certain extent. And so it puts us more in line with other developed nations. And it should, and this was what I believe the Trump administration was thinking of, drive more investment in the United States. So that's a good thing.
Your turn, Dan. What do you think of it?
Well, I guess the one provision that really kind of gets me a little bit and makes me question why they did it is the 100% bonus depreciation provision, because that concept originally came in right after 9/11 when the country sort of really needed it, and it stuck around at a 50% rate for a number of years. It was scheduled to be phased out.
Explain what that is.
It's to incentivize capital-heavy companies, so companies with actual manufacturing plants, machinery, to spend more on those different business inputs.
Right. And whatever they spend, they can write off immediately as opposed to having depreciated over a period of years. And that has historically been used when the country is sort of in a crisis mode. And we're not really in a crisis mode right now. So I found that kind of curious, mm-hmm. as to why they would do that.
But it is consistent with the platform upon which Trump and the Republicans ran, which was to promote manufacturing and bring business back to America. So agreed, we're definitely not in crisis mode, and it seems like an odd time to introduce these things, but it's consistent,
right.
Consistent with the platform.
We have an email from Mary. If you want to continue to receive approximately the same large refund, do you have to do anything different than prior to the new tax law?
Probably. You need to really look at your withholding. If you're having withholding, if that's the way you pay in your tax, then you really want to make sure that that's stable and hasn't gone down. And if you're paying estimated payments, you'll want to make sure that those are appropriate.
All right. We'll go to Henry calling from Holton. Hi, Henry. Go ahead.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to point out to the listeners that there's a movement called the War Tax Resistance Movement that people elect to withhold part of their federal income taxes because they don't want to pay for war. And me personally, I'm not going to pay 50% of it to reflect the approximate half of the money that all tax dollars go to defense spending. And I just wanted to let people know that's the thing.
Daniel, why don't you tell us what happens? What are you risking if you do that?
Well, I read stories, I guess, about folks who take frivolous positions, what the IRS would deem to be a frivolous position, and it can be very risky to your freedom and to your pocketbook. So I think you need to be cautious about doing that sort of thing. It's an area that, as a compliance person, I don't really see a lot of that. But a tax attorney or someone who deals with that stuff on the front line would be probably better positioned to comment on some of the specifics. But you need to be very careful about doing those sorts of things.
Henry, thanks for your call. We'll go to Kenny Bunk and Jay. Love it when this happened, from Aroostook County to York County. Hi, Jay. Go ahead.
Hi. I just have a question about the personal exemption. It's my understanding that they're taking away the personal exemption, the $4,050. And doesn't that, in effect, cancel out the increase in the standard deduction to $24,000?
Yes, it can. If you're talking a married couple of two people, their standard deduction personal exemption combo in 2018 is $24,000, and in 2017 it was probably a little over $21,000 or so. So I think there's about a $2,900 actual increase overall there. So it's not as substantial as some might tout it as being by just looking at the standard deduction amount.
Jay, thanks for your question. An email from Chris. I was surprised to find out recently that under previous tax law, certain kinds of residential property rental income should be reported on Schedule C instead of Schedule E and may or may not be subject to SE tax. Can your guest comment on this?
Can you?
Certain kinds of residential
rental income?
Mm-hmm.
I think he's talking perhaps about a very short-term rentals or residences, and I have to admit that I haven't had that issue to dive into it much, but I think he's talking about maybe in the case of someone who's renting something for a very brief period of time.
Okay. Well, we're almost out of time, and I just wanted to get some last words from each of you about what you're advising your clients to think about now and to do in the next year that may or may not be different than what they've done before. I'll start with you, Jessamine.
Again, I'm on the investment side of things, and so a lot of questions come up about the business cycle and where we stand in it. And we continue to support that people stay invested. It's as simple as that.
Okay, and Dan?
I think the biggest thing is to watch your withholding, watch the payments that you've paid in, and try to get a sense in some way, if you can, where you think 2018 will fall for you so that you don't have a huge surprise come next April.
All right. Well, thank you both for being here. Jessamine Norton, Chief Investment Officer and Executive Vice President with Spinnaker Trust, and Daniel Dworin, Principal with Albin, Randall, and Bennett. Roddy Nickpour ran the board today. Owen Manahan answered your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives at mainecalling.org. Today's program will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, sleep. What it means for your mental health, physical health, and how you might want to get more. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.